You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grepierre, and today's episode is with Tamina. I feel a strong sense of jealousy towards you listeners who aren't familiar with today's guest, because after this episode, you'll be able to experience his beautiful music for the first time, and God, what a treat that is. This Belgian/Egyptian musician has made a name for himself all throughout Europe with his skillful guitar playing and emotive vocals. His debut album, Amir, paints a grand picture of an artist that's carving out their own path and not letting expectations define him. To many in the States, he's a completely new artist, but you know, with the co-sign of Radiohead's Colin Greenwood, it's only a matter of time until Tamina is selling out theaters here like he's already doing all throughout Europe. On this episode, we chat about his life and his family's culture and how all of, you know, his experiences from his youth to his young adulthood to his present day has inspired this amazing album that he's made. This is the 405 Exchange with Tamina. Enjoy. So I've been into your music now for a few years, and it's beautiful to have you here in New York. Welcome.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, there'll definitely be Americans and people from other places listening to this with no context of who you are. It's always helpful to go into the beginning, and you know, obviously we're going to talk about you and your music. But I think to give context for people, it's really important to share with listeners how music came into your life, largely due to your family history. Can you share with people about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, so my mom has a very big record collection in which I snooped around and I stole some of those records. Well, and she had this particular shelf dedicated to Arabic music, and on this shelf there were the records of my grandfather, who was a Arabic singer from Egypt, and he was a very famous artist. But unfortunately, he died when I was around 5 years old, so I don't have memories of him. Even though I knew him, but I guess music was just always around, you know. But eventually, me starting to play music that came from jabbing around on a piano and just really liking it, and then going to classical music training but not really liking that.
Yeah.
And then eventually finding out that I really liked writing my own stuff, and yeah,
I think what's really powerful about that is that for a lot of people, they might enjoy music and look at it from a peripheral level and think like it's such a wild idea to consider it a job or an avenue. But you had it where it just seemed kind of obvious to you because it was just innately around you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was always an obvious thing to make something in a way for me, because I think I wasn't really very communicative as a kid, and I felt like through writing little stories and all of that, that I was a better communicator. So in the beginning, I did mainly theater, actually. I made these little theater plays, and I went to theater school as well. But in the end, music took over, because it was the perfect combination of writing something and perfecting it, and then also being able to perform it. Yeah.
That's incredible, though. You know, there was a lot of anticipation towards your debut album, Amir, both in Belgium and throughout greater Europe. And I have to say, it's a beautiful piece of work, man.
Thanks, man.
It's really something else. You know, I know you've been asked loads about
ad nauseum about the experience of making the album. And I think one of the things that intrigues a lot of people is the fact that it is your debut record. What I would like to know is, what would you say was the most surprising experience you had in terms of emotion in regards to making it? Because obviously there's always that element of expectations, but to actually go in and do it, like, what would you say surprised you?
A good question. I think what surprised me was when you write a song, you kind of feel like I have to record it now because I feel it right now, you know? And you think I will never be able to capture this emotion ever again. But what surprised me was that the songs, they were very versatile and they could evolve along with me. So when I went to record them, some of the songs I already had lying around for a couple of years, but they kind of evolved with me, and recording them, I found new layers in these songs, found also new emotions while singing them, which was a very nice thing to feel, because sometimes you think, yeah, it's now or never, you know, but the songs, and also still performing them live, is there's always something new, I feel.
Yeah, I feel like today will be my first time seeing you live, later at Pace than when you do the Ludlow, and I've seen videos of you performing live, and I feel like something I've noticed is that you really do love changing the inflection of words and tonality when you're singing.
Absolutely, yes.
That must be like a very powerful feeling as a performer, knowing you could do that and still keep the essence of what the song is.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's also the best way to keep things interesting and to not be bored of your own songs.
Yeah, exactly. The album starts with Habibi, which is a track that's, you know, quite obviously observational and pensive. What made you want to start the album with this one?
Well, it was actually, for me, the perfect introduction song to my music, I think, because that's also the first single I ever released. And I felt like, yeah, it's in a way, it got people to the essence immediately. I wouldn't say it's my... It's a pretty naive song in a way, but
what do you mean by that, naive?
Well, I was 18 when I wrote it, and it's that kind of romance you experience when you are that age, when you kind of a destructive romance in a way, I mean, in your mind. So
is it like the element of like how, because I was actually just discussing this with a friend recently about like how when you're like 17, 18, 19, the relationships and friendships you are in, they all feel kind of do or die and like end of the world and everything in it. But as you age, you realize like just how it's just the age that made you feel that way.
Yes. It's actually that. Yeah. I think it's that. Absolutely. It's I wouldn't say the feelings, therefore, you experienced mean less, yeah. But they were very strong, and I can still feel them if I sing that song and all of that. But you do realize later that it's a sort of naivete that you won't be able to find anymore. I think you tend to become more rational when you grow older, and you tend to think too much, which is actually kind of a block for your creativity. So right now when I'm writing, I feel like I always have to get back to, I always have to turn off my mind in a way.
I can understand that. I feel like something I've heard from
musician friends of mine and you know, like other producers, is that when you're making music, even though it's work and a career, you do have to have that element of play within it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I would say for the last 2 years now, I've been dying to ask you about the track A Cigar. It was the first song of yours that I heard, and to this day, it's a track that I love very, very much. You wrote that song so long ago, but tell me, how do you feel about the song today? Because I feel like that's a song that's almost quite quintessential in regards to your sound, and I wonder how it resonates with you as the creator.
Well, it's still a song I enjoy playing. It's a song I wrote when I visited the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, and I saw this little painting of this was a skull with a cigarette, and for me it was just, my interpretation was this guy who didn't have any regrets, or who kind of had a sinful life maybe, but who would do it again if he would have the chance. So we tried to show that in the video as well, which my brother directed.
And for people listening who haven't seen the video, you should go see it. Words don't do it justice, honestly.
I'm very happy with the video. It was an ambitious video for that time. I mean, but I'm very, very happy we pulled it off. And it's another one of those naive songs, I would say.
Well, you know what? You say naive, but in regards to this song and a little bit for BB, I think something that you're very good at is your lyrics are poignant in a way where you're observing things that might seem obvious to some, mm-hmm. but you won't really ever hear people talk about it. I mean, in regards to Cigar, I'll butcher the lyrics, but when you touch on people in the world who commit suicide and kind of like that kind of avenue, I mean, it's an obvious thing to point out, but you never hear people say it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, I still remember back then where that line came from in a way, because I just read this, article by a psychiatrist, and he threw up the question. He didn't make a statement, but he just threw up the question, like, in regards to suicide, if our views about it were the right ones, and if some people choose to step out of it, isn't that their choice? I mean, there were all these, there was a lot of questions. I mean, for me, it made me think about it as well. At the same time, I fully think that life is worth living, and I think one should try, even though when you feel like I didn't choose to be here, you know, no one chose that. Everyone's just born
existing.
Yeah, so you don't. So it might sometimes feel like, but should I endure it? But I think it is worth to endure it, and all the ups and all the downs, and
You know, what was a very pleasant experience with your album is the fact that, you know, I was familiar with your music with the singles, and I think a lot of people would have described your music as dark and morose. I'm sure you've heard those words. But I feel for you as an artist, it's so important for you to have different words applied to you. So when this album came out, I think it took all of us by surprise that there were so many different touchstones of light and sunlight and color. And I think of a track like So It Goes, which is such a beautiful love letter to your heritage. Can you talk to me about the experience you had in making the song from a musical standpoint?
I'm very happy you say that, by the way. It's, I think, songs that have only misery in them, I don't like them. There always needs to be a touch of hope or light, you know. So It Goes. It's one of those songs in which I actually address a certain kind of nihilism, which keeps on following me, you know. And and I think a lot of people. But at the same time, in the end of the song, there is a realization that you have to take your own. You have to realize that you are the master of how you look at everything, you know. And so it's not. It doesn't end badly, I would say. And yeah, it's one of the songs where you can hear the Arabic orchestra probably the best way.
Yeah.
So we recorded with a small Arabic orchestra from Brussels. They're based in Brussels. And I really, really loved recording with them.
Yeah. You could tell, like, it's a track that feels uplifting, but not in a way of because the wording or not because of, like, anything that's very typical. It's just like, that track is pure emotion. It's really great hearing that.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, you know, apart from Cigar, a big favorite of mine was Sun May Shine. That's another great, really man. Great tune.
Great. Yeah.
So, you know, we talked about the video for Cigar rather quickly. You know, imagery plays a big role with your art, especially with the album cover, which is a very striking image. Can you go into the importance that photography and imagery plays into your craft?
Sure. Well, I'm very lucky because I have a younger brother. He's called Rami, and he actually follows me around everywhere, you know, and he takes pictures, and he has a great vision, and he likes my music, of course, and he has an idea about how he wants to represent it visually, and I, of course, have an idea as well, but I feel like we support each other in that. And so I got used to a camera from a pretty young age, maybe mainly because of him, because he was just always photographing me. And you know, in the album cover for the pictures around the album, we wanted to go to Egypt to take the pictures because we felt like it was the right vibe, and also to return to the land of our father, you know. And we went to Dahab, to the Red Sea, wow. where there was this pretty lagoon.
Yeah.
I went for a quick swim, and that's when he took the picture. Yeah.
That must have been such a transformative experience. I personally, I have a bit of a list of places I'm dying to go to. Egypt is like number one up there.
Cool.
Followed by Morocco and Greece. Like, I love to see these places. But for you, that must have been such a transformative experience because of just that, the land of your fathers.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there multiple times, but just to be there for also for my work, you know, to make something, that was a very great experience, because I always used to go there just because it was because I had family there, and also because it's a beautiful country. I love visiting it, but it was a very different experience this time, which felt really good. It felt really good to make Egypt a part of the creative process. Yeah,
it's so important. I only have a couple more questions for you. Thanks for taking the time to chat today.
No, of course.
I know it's a heavy question to be asked, but it's one I'd like to explore with you if you'd like to take the time. A lot of things that are written about you and discussed are about your heritage in regards to being Belgian and Egyptian and having all these different things correlating. What does identity mean to you today? Because your family hails from Egypt, you've grown up in Belgium, and you've also spent a lot of time in Holland. I know that's definitely not an easy thing to answer, but what does identity mean to you?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, it means the world to me, actually, to be honest. I remember very well moving to Amsterdam when I was 17 for my studies. I moved there, and I had lost all sense of touch with my identity. I didn't know who I was anymore, because in one place I was this certain kind of person, and in the other, people didn't know me at all, and they regarded me as a different kind of person. So I was like, whoa, if people in this place view me differently and in another place in another way. So who am I then, you know? It took a long time to be able to be myself in a way, in any place I would go to. Because I used to be very, very shy, I think, and I was not communicating. And I'm not there yet. I think for a lot of people, it's really finding their way to just be at ease with themselves and with new people, and you know. But so yeah, and also in regards to my roots and all of that, I just accepted the fact that I didn't really have a home country, you know. I mean, I grew up in Belgium, but I never felt a big patriotic. I mean, it's also very typical for a Belgian to not really feel patriotic, because we are such a small country, and I mean, there's not much to be proud of. But
I can kind of relate. So I was born here in America. My family hails from France and Haiti. West Africa. I grew up a good portion of my life in England, and then I came back to the States, and I go back and forth to England and Europe and do work, and that feels like home to me. But I've noticed since a young age, I feel not exactly the same as you, but somewhat similar, that like the way that people have the context of home, of I was born here, I only have this as my identity, and I go to school and do all that, I never had that really. And it's like, I'm an American, but I don't feel American.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I go to Britain, it feels like home, but I'm aware of not being British.
Yeah,
it's a
yeah,
weird
yeah.
thing.
I totally get you, man. Yeah. I feel it. It's the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, identity is in the end. I mean, in the situation that you and I are in, and I mean, it's even more important. I would say. I mean, it's always important, but it's just. It's kind of the. It's what you hold on to, you know. Everywhere you go, if you know, if you have a sense of who you are and what your values are and all of that, then it's easy making decisions. It's easy communicating with people, because you can always go back to that inner sense of peace, knowing who you are.
No, exactly.
I think it's a big, big search for who you are.
I would say so. Yeah. Before I let you run here, I saved this for last because I'm sure you're always asked about it, but Colin Greenwood, the bassist of Radiohead, features on your album. You're smiling because you knew somehow it had to come in. But, you know, I bring this up because obviously there's people who might be listening not know you. I think that's something that might make people go, oh, wait, excuse me, what? I think what's really beautiful about this is that it wasn't a case of labels or management getting involved. He's a legitimate fan of you and your music. What's it been like to have a fan in him? I mean, I imagine you as being a musician, you've enjoyed Radiohead. I mean, what's it like knowing like someone like him, not just on a human level, but with his experience and his, you know, talent, has reacted to your music? That sounds like it's both a blessing and kind of terrifying.
Well, yeah, that's well put. But it means the world to me, really. I was, of course, terrified the first time he came to a concert.
I can imagine.
I still remember our sound guy. He was he saw Colin going up to the front taking pictures of us with his cell phone. So, and he didn't know what he was seeing, of course. You know, it was very surreal. But then afterwards, I mean, he's the coolest guy. Honestly, he's one of the gentlest souls I know, and he's here actually with us. He's with us. He's gonna play tonight as well.
Oh, that's amazing! That's really something special.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I think it's gonna be the first time we're gonna play as a duo, without the rest of the band. I mean, of course, yeah, I'm a big Radiohead fan. I love Radiohead. I love his work. I love. He's one of my favorite bass players for sure. I think it's just also the first time we played together was It was a very it was of course very surreal. I must admit that when he came to the studio, we were all very excited, but at the same time it felt so natural. It felt so it didn't feel I don't know, it felt immediately great. And he played on a song called Indigo Night, which he nailed, you know, instantly. And then of course later in the year we started performing with him, and he started playing on other songs as well. It feels great involving him in the creative process as well, and being able to play with him on stage, you know, that's crazy. Yeah.
I think the word you were looking for, and I don't want to speak for you, so you can correct me if I have it off, but I think the word you were looking for is that it wasn't transactional. And what I mean by that is, I feel like something that's kind of rough with being a musician, especially a new musician, people are talking about you, is a lot of interactions can feel transactional, whether you might want something for someone or someone wants something for you. So to interact with someone like him where it's none of that, there's something really powerful in that.
Absolutely. You put it very well. It's absolutely that. It's just, I mean, he's so passionate about music. It's incredible. It's so inspiring to see it, you know? I mean, he has had the best career you could, you know, wish for, and he's still mesmerized by the power of music, and he still just wants to play music all day long and discover new things and go to concerts. And it's how I want to live my life when I'm his age, really. I hope I will be as passionate still as he is. And
I like to tell people, especially I like to tell particularly younger musicians, that experiences like that, interactions like that, are so important, because I mean it kind of goes back to what we're talking about with identity. A lot of identity deals with seeing things that are possible and being able to correlate it with your experience. With you being a younger musician, him being one that's a bit more seasoned, experienced, you get to see what's possible. So that's really beautiful.
Yes. I mean, of course, I will. I won't. I hope for the best, but you know, the Radiohead's career is,
it's
of course,
like Mount Everest.
yeah, it's kind of like. But I'm already very, very happy and grateful for what I'm doing now, and I'm sure some more beautiful things will come. And
I should mention, so you're here in New York right now doing some stuff. By the time this comes out, it probably already have come out, but a tiny desk that you did in DC will be coming out. Congratulations on
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, man.
For people in New York who are listening, you'll be playing our beautiful National Sawdust, I believe on September 11th, so definitely come out for that, because that'll be something cool. And yeah, Tamino, thanks for chatting me, man.
Thank you
really
so much,
I got to meet you.
Thanks, yeah, man.
And you show me that life isn't love.